is 6 o'clock, Wednesday, November 10th. We'll go ahead and get started with our meeting. Daniel Gashke, Chair of the Committee, and it looks like you have the recording going there.
Yes, I hope so. Yeah, it looks like it's recording.
So for attendance purposes, Supervisor Beth is excused. She said that she would not be here. Supervisor Nudo is walking in. Supervisor Mowers told me that she's on her way, and I have not heard anything from Zach. Both Youth and Governance are in attendance. So, okay, well then we'll just go right ahead and get started. Just want to let you know that this meeting has been properly notified and published. We'll look forward to just jumping right in. Terry, if that's the plan to VJ's update, is that
that sounds good? Great.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
Thanks.
All right. Hi, VJ. Thanks for...
Hello. Welcome, everyone. Good to see you all. So my name is VJ Pandian. I'm a horticulture extension educator for Kenosha Racine Counties, and I serve 10% of my time in Milwaukee County as well. My primary office is stationed down here in KCC. And so today I'm going to talk about Plant Health Advising Program. And this is a typical program. Extension tends to provide direct service to the residents of Kenosha Racine Counties as well as Milwaukee County as well too. So we provide direct consultations with all the consumer folks as well as commercial folks as well too. And it's a very popular program. Many residents depend on extension. They know extension because of us, actually, in a way you can say that. Because whenever they have an issue with their gardening or they have an issue with the lawn, so they think about extension as the first person to call in or check in with them what's going on. The reason is that we provide a research-based information. So nowadays in the technology, you can Google up everything, but how far those are true is questionable. And the geographic location also dictates actually too, the management practices. So extension is a one that provides a research-based information, more reliable-based information. So that's one of the reasons why this program is a very popular one. And so traditionally back in before 2018, every county used to have the plant diagnostic or plant health advising program, where a group of master gardeners work together with the extension educator. We provide the direct service to the residents. And either the consumer calls in, walks in, or actually even text in or talk to them. Now, with the extension change in extension, I was being appointed in 2019 to integrate the three offices in Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine Counties offices together to do this program in a more integrated way. And there was a humongous task because every county has a different way of running things, actually. And the master gardener station in those counties also have a different way of functioning things, actually. So in 2019, it was a nightmare because I have to go to three different offices in the 5 days of my week, check actually what's going on. So believe me or not, before the COVID hit, I had a plan. So the plan is actually very to integrate all three offices together by having one common website, one consumer call, one email ID, one website, and we used actually a program called Grasshopper. And this program allows the master gardeners to sit in from their home. They don't even actually come to the offices, and where they can able to directly talk to the consumers, or the consumer can call directly actually this number, and the master gardeners were able to pick it up. So in a way, the COVID was actually a test drive for us. We want to test out how it works, and it works amazingly. Whereas the rest of the 69 counties in the state were not able to function it very well, we actually are so fortunate because of the Grasshopper app, where our master gardeners were able to continue to provide the services in the three county areas. And it doesn't matter which county the master gardeners are in, so we have a system scheduled. So anyone from any of the county master gardeners can able to, as long as they're in the system, they were able to answer the calls. And I was able to supervise them, provide technical support into it. And it worked out really well. And we also improvised our system with using the Grasshopper app. And let's say, in this particular year, in 2021, from January to October, so we answer all ranges of questions, from trees all the way even to frog, which is not related to horticulture, or even actually to sometimes even to ag, people call in, you know, what is this bird about? You know, we don't have any knowledge on it. So, but people used to think that extension, we know everything. So, but we tend to provide guidance and services. So if you look actually this year, from January to October 21, we got approximately 780 calls and inquiries. Out of 780 calls and inquiries, nearly one-third are mostly related to trees and shrubs. And that's a very significant one. And that is the reason why we got a lot of inquiries this year to trees and shrubs. And the reason is, it all has to do with the weather this year. And this year is one of the most driest season that we ever seen in our history in Kenosha County. So this is actually the average precipitation for Southeast Wisconsin in 2021. That includes from Sheboygan all the way to Kenosha. And if you look actually in this screen, 2012 was one of the driest season. We had a drought. And it's comparable to 2021 as well too. So beginning in March, we had a very, very, very low precipitation. We had really this time, this is one of the first year, the spring is officially coincided with our original spring. So March 15th, we actually, the temperature hits at 50, 55 degree, and it's been steady, but it was very dry. We got about one inch of rain compared to 2 inch, that was, seems to be the normal one. And the most driest month is in the month of July. We got only 1.97 inches. July is one of the critical season for many landscape plants. That is the time they actually start producing the buds for the next season. If they don't get enough rain, enough nutrients, at this month of July, they're not going to produce any sufficient buds for the next following season. So July turned out to be a worst nightmare for many of the landscape plants because of the very low precipitation. Now, in total, till about September, we got only about 18.77 inches, which is very, very significantly low. Even in month of October, if you get about 3 inches, still it's going to be very short compared to 2012. So that tells you that in the entire Southeast Wisconsin, we had an average a very, very low rainfall this year. To make this situation worse, Kenosha County is brutal. We are officially labeled as under extremely drought condition. So if you look here in the Wisconsin map, in the month of July 30th, you can see the Kenosha and parts of Walnut County, they're under the extremely drought condition right up here. The rainfall is very, very low compared to the rest of the southeast part of Wisconsin and the entire state of Wisconsin. In March, only 0.76. Compared to the Southeast Wisconsin, average rainfall this year was 1.9, so we are very still low. And in the month of July, we got only 1.48 inches of rain. So it's extremely low compared to the rest of the state, and that's very unusual. The other interesting thing is that I started actually wondering, why Kenosha? When I looked at the Midwest, what's happening up? And I looked in the month of July and what's happening up in the Midwest. The rest of the Midwest seems to be fine, except in parts of Kenosha, parts of in Lake County in Illinois, and some areas, counties in the Minnesota area seems to be. So it is very bizarre, actually, why we have this kind of extreme, unusually droughty season in Kenosha County. The National Integrated Drought Information System has officially labeled Kenosha as one of the driest part of the county in the year. In the last 127 years, this is the worst droughty year in the history of Kenosha. So I didn't go through the records in the last 100 years, but I believe what they say. So I think that really talks about it. So we can see actually in the month of July, our lands are so barebone. We can see the cracks. We can also see the trees are literally dying. And to make things worse, the temperature was also very unusual. Even though we didn't get enough rainfall, the temperatures also started fluctuating. So this is actually the temperature normal for Kenosha 1, which you see the green bar right up here, and this longitudinal green bar, the horizontal one. This is the normal average temperature for Kenosha. All these black bars that you're seeing right up here, these are the unusual temperatures that we're starting to see in Kenosha County during the growing season. And these are some extreme temperatures that we recorded in the history of Kenosha County. So none has really gone to that extreme. But the thing that is matters a lot is that this year, the number of days that the temperature has been above 85 degrees in Kenosha County is recorded to about 51 days, which is very unusual because in Wisconsin, especially in Kenosha, we used to get in the range of 30 to 40 days. So this year we got number of days above 85 is 51. Why it matters? Many trees are actually have a specific heat hardiness tolerance. So they can tolerate in Wisconsin only to a day, about like 40, 45 days. Beyond 45 days, they simply shut down. They're not used to it. They're not tropical trees. They are temperate trees. So they have only a certain maximum tolerance to the heat. So this has been a very unusual year where we've seen about 51 days where the temperature has been about 85 degrees. So the impact we can start to see even in the month of July. Say we can start to see many trees are shutting down. Either they turn yellow and they go to a dormant mode by showing a fall coloration. Some trees literally get tossed. Like these birch trees, they literally actually got burned down actually because of the heat one. These pictures are taken actually at the Kenosha County Center. So it's a good specimen for me actually to study about these trees. And many clients complained about their arborvitaes as well as the cedar trees, they've been turning completely brown. And so these are all related to drought stress. People who are cultivating tomatoes and many other vegetable crops, especially the cool season crops, they didn't do very well actually. So their leaves are all rolling, their flowers have been bursted, so they didn't have a good formation of cauliflowers or kohlrabis and stuff like that this year. And the impact of the drought, the first thing you're going to see is that the loss of photosynthetic activity, which means that once the leaves get burnt down, they're not going to produce any more food for the rest of the year. So which means that they're not going to store enough carbohydrates in the system. And if they don't have enough carbohydrate in the system, they cannot function any other activities. The protein synthesis, the lipid synthesis, your secondary metabolic synthesis all gets shut down. So when all these things get shut down, the trees are literally in ICU, I would say. So which means that if they don't get enough energy this year, they're not going to have enough energy to overcome the winter. So we're going to see the worst impact the next year, actually. So it's like a double whammy effect, actually, on the trees. So that makes it vulnerable to the cold temperature. And they're going to have a very poor production of flowers for next year as well. So thank God, actually, this year we got enough apple flowers. But next year, I'm very doubtful whether they're going to have enough bud production for next year. So, and to make things worse, many of these stress trees are highly vulnerable to pests and diseases. In plants, they have an immune system. The immune system is produced by secondary metabolites. And these secondary metabolites have been dictated by how much carbohydrate reserves they have. If they don't have enough carbohydrate reserve, they're not going to produce enough secondary metabolites. If they don't have enough secondary metabolites, then they're going to become vulnerable to pests and diseases, just like our human body has. You know, so our immune system goes down. Even the simple flu could make our life miserable. Same thing is going to happen to them. Yes.
I'm sorry, I was going to wait, but I won't forget that. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
A couple of questions going back, and I hope I can remember. One, you say in July, because we did not have enough water, it's going to affect for the following season. So, like for this year, we're going to see the effects in 2022, correct?
There are things like there's a short term and a long term. What you're seeing right now is a short term effect. Right. The long term, yes.
You were going to see that. Now, is that just regular trees? I don't know, I should call it salt trees. Or fruit trees? Is there a difference between the two of them?
So, that's a very good question. So, certain trees are drought tolerant trees, they might be okay with that. However, many of the Wisconsin trees are sensitive species, like birch, basswoods, including apples, pears. They're all sensitive species. They need moisture. They need those things. If they don't get enough of these things, then you're going to have the impact. You're going to see them next year as well, too. The reason is, if the system, the internal mechanism has been screwed up, trees take a while to build those internal mechanisms back again to get back to normal. So, and that factor is determined by the severity of the drought and how long the drought has been. So, if the severe drought is only for 2 days, yeah, the tree could recuperate back again. But if it's extended for multiple months, then it's going to be a long process for the trees to recuperate. So oftentimes, you know, we might tend to say that 2 years ago we got the drought. Now we're seeing the impact of it further again in those things.
Yes.
And it goes with the conifers too. Next year we're going to see all the conifers, like your pine trees, all those things going to produce large amount of cones. And you might be puzzled why they're producing. It's all because of the drought effect. Because the trees get to have the psychological tendencies that, I'm going to be dying next year. Before that, let me produce all the progeny so my progeny can live. So they're going to start to produce a copious amount of all those things. And so that's another thing that's going to be.
They got more grains than us. No, I'm joking. The other question, actually, is, okay, we did not have enough rain or whatever. What about if you water them enough? What's the difference? Because I see it.
Absolutely.
The difference, you know.
It does make a lot of difference. So if you treat a patient in an ICU, there's a probability, a good chance the patient will recover.
Okay.
So especially the young trees, they desperately need some moisture. So during this growing season, when they're in fully leaf, and if you do provide enough moisture, at least 2 times a week, then definitely they will make it up. So at least they can't able to tolerate the heat, but at least they can able to survive. So there's a good probability they will make it out. So, but on a lot of times, many homeowners, when you have a large trees, they don't water it. And they pretty much they understand that, okay, the trees can survive itself and manage itself. Yes, that's possible on large trees. They may have a better system and they have an extended root system to scavenge all those things. But as in young trees, chances is very, very low.
I'm talking about it because actually I'm talking about fruit trees.
Fruit trees, yeah.
Fruit trees. And would that be good? I know it's too many questions, but that's something of interest when it comes to gardening or things.
Mm-hmm.
Would that make a difference when you water them to spray water on top of the tree, you know, for the leaves? And I'm talking more about fruit trees than anything else.
It's best to water directly on the ground rather than actually using a sprinkler and spraying on top of it. Most of the moisture has been absorbed through the roots, not through the foliage. So when you spray it on the foliage, it attracts more fungal diseases. And that makes a big headache in trying to manage those things like apple scabs and those things in the fruit trees. So, and again, maybe spraying on the top of the tree may have provide a little bit of a cooling effect, but rather than actually in a cooling effect, you're going to invite the disease. So it's best to water it in the ground. And it also minimizes evaporation loss. And if you also mulch your trees, that's also very good too. So those kind of things will really help.
Okay. And going back to the question, I'm trying to shut up there. Especially for like tomato plants or whatever, when is the best time to water them? I hear some people say in the morning, okay, some say at night, some say mid-morning.
Okay. I get the question all the time, early morning is the best time. Because the reason is, the early in the morning time, say, when you don't have that much evaporation loss, the plants can actually able to absorb those moistures very easily. And they're going to start at that early in the morning, the time they're also going to start that transpiration process where they're going to suck the moisture. So with the full capacity, they can able to absorb the moisture. And you have a very minimum loss of water from the evaporation. The nighttime is the worst time to water the plants. Because the nighttime, what happens is that though you water it, the water is going to simply sit, the plants cannot absorb it. And with the 12 hours of nighttime, it's a great fungal party time. So you get the fungal diseases and everything because they like the moisture. So they will start actually infecting the plant. So morning is the best time.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, guys.
Not at all.
No, we know that's an area of interest for you. That's great.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
So the impact of the null is very visible. You could have seen actually this year. And the worst thing is that even though the lawn has gone dormant, they can be in the dormant state for 2 months. But the problem is the drought has been very severe this year. So we have a soil moisture sensor at KCC, and it records from the value of 0 to 200 centibar. 0 means it's highly saturated with water. 200 means it's bone dry. So our soil moisture sensor reached the maximum capacity of 200, actually. And it has been like that for more than a month. And so, which you can tell that the lawns, yeah, they can go dormant, but to that severity of the dormancy, severity of the drought, we haven't seen it in the history. So in fall, we had a lot of homeowners complaining about, my lawn looks like this patchy. What's happening up? Is it a grub issue? It is a chinch bug issue? What's going on? It's all because of the drought. So the drought killed most of the grasses. Some of the grasses came back again. So they all look bizarre and patchy appearance like that. So how do you fix this lawn? So those have been a common question that's coming up for us again. So to address this drought issue, in the month actually of June, I started actually reaching out to the news media, and the news media also reached out to me, both the Kenosha News as well as the Racine Journal Times, as well as the state actually, I published an article on how to mitigate drought stress on the trees. And I think that article got circulated even with the Wisconsin Arborist Association. They want me to continue to article on their professional journals actually in the month again to see the impact of the drought, what we're gonna see for next year as well too. So I think many residents, upon reading this article, they also further reached out to us. And so we tried our best to help them, you know, how to minimize this drought stress on trees and shrubs and things. One of the direct impact of the drought is the rise of gypsy moth. Many people may not have heard about this particular caterpillar called gypsy moth. It's an invasive one. Back in that time, gypsy moth was actually bred for making silkworms. And so one of the scientists accidentally left the gypsy moth outside accidentally, and then it kind of spread it throughout the United States and started rampaging on more than 300 different species, including oaks, maples, and everything. And so beginning in like in Wisconsin, we had this gypsy moth infestation for a while, but in the last decade or so, when the DNR has been very proactive, they've been releasing some, what do you call NPV virus, which is called nucleopolyhead virus, which is very specific on gypsy moth caterpillar, which knocks them out. And plus, our spring rain helped them out. The spring rain also naturally releases a fungus, and that knocks this gypsy moth caterpillar. But this year was unusual because our spring started in mid-March and was super dry. And that really boosted the gypsy moth population. And I was so amazed that traditionally, typically I've seen gypsy moth attack on oak trees, maple trees, your linden trees. But this is the first time in my extension career history to see the gypsy moth attack on Colorado blue spruce. And this particular spruce tree was completely devoid of all its needles by the gypsy moth caterpillar right up here. The worst thing is that if all these needles got devoid, the tree is not going to produce a new needles on in replacing the older needles. All the new needles will be only in the terminal bud. So your tree is going to look like a bottle brush appearance. So it is better that the homeowner cut down the tree. So many homeowners in Kenosha County, it is very significant in Kenosha County compared to the rest of the counties in the state, because they didn't have a similar issue. So even our state specialist was so surprised to see the gypsy moth attack actually happening on spruce trees. So this is one of the surprising things that struck actually Kenosha County residents, and we got literally a lot of calls regarding to this particular issue. If you have taken a drive either in any of the highway or even the county highways or even actually on the state 94, you would have seen this particular plant called cutleaf teasel. It's an invasive plant, and it's all over actually in our highways, in the medians of the highways and stuff like that. It's a very bad plant. It can actually, you know, overthrow any of our native species, and it could dominate, and it could become more ugly in our landscape. And this year, and specifically with the drought that we had, this plant seems to be taking more opportunistic, maybe making more advantage of the situation, and it's been spreading out very crazily as well too. So here, the Wisconsin Terrestrial Invasive Plant Species Report, where people can report where this particular plant can be found. You can see actually many people in Kenosha, Racine, in Southeast Wisconsin has reported about this particular plant as well. So this plant is also a problematic one. So when I talked to the Village of Bristol administrator a few months ago, he wants me to address this issue in our region. And we are planning actually working with our state specialists to find a way how to address this particular issue. So next year we might be doing some research trials in Kenosha County in figuring out. My predecessor Lee Presley was already did a research on this one. So Yet another plant that is very common in our region, and especially in Kenosha County, is called the Queen Anne's Lace. It's all over this year, this particular summer. Everybody, you see this white humble frogs actually right up there. And I don't know why, and honestly, why it has been very widespread this year. It is not a native one. It's actually a wild carrot, basically is. It's a biennial one. So the first year they produce a carrot tuber, second year they produce the flowers. So that's what you're seeing right up here. So, and that's something spectacular this year. It's been all over in our county. But the one thing that is not good for our county is this called the brown marmorated stink bug. Have you guys seen this right now? Oh my God, this year it has been all over in our counties. This is a very nuisance bug. And if you have seen a YouTube video from Pennsylvania or from New York, people will really get disgusted with this bug. Because this bug, when you crush them, it stinks. And when they actually come inside our house and they tend to overwinter inside our house, they will emit all this foul odor. And that makes it very uneasy for us to live inside. So this bug population has risen so significantly in this year. I think it's also part of related to drought, and it's been breeding from 2013 or 2012, I believe. And so we've been seeing the steady increase of this population of this particular bug. Blight. So we all enjoy boxwood plants because it makes a beautiful hedge borders in our landscape. It has a beautiful greenery border. It takes shade, full sun. But what happened was that in 2018, Kenosha County reported the boxwood blight, which is a very deadly disease that attacks a boxwood one. And since then, many residents in Kenosha County are wondering whenever they see an issue in the boxwood, is it related to boxwood blight or what, something like that. So many of our calls also related to boxwoods are related to this boxwood blight, which you see in this photograph. When this disease happens, it wipes out your boxwood in a short period of time. But there are other diseases and insects that mimics like it is. One is called volatile blight, which you can see in this picture. It looks like as if more of winter injuries, but it is actually related to another blight disease, but it's not deadly compared to the boxwood blight. Another one is called the leaf miner. This leaf miner is a tiny insect which tunnels between the two cuticle layers of the leaf, and it kind of gives you an appearance actually like an infestation of this boxwood blight. So people who are trying to wonder, you know, if they see any of these damages, they think is it related to boxwood blight, or shall I report it to the Wisconsin DNR about this, something like that, they ask me about it. So that's another interesting thing for us to diagnose this year, to see the number of issues coming related to this. Another unique thing in Kenosha County that I've seen, and even the Parks Director Matt Collins has been reported, is the burrow blight. And I think the rest of the state hasn't seen this, especially, but in southeast part of Wisconsin, especially in Kenosha, I've been noticing it. I took this picture in one of our county park system. And this particular fungal disease, usually you see the severity in late summer, early in the fall. And when we start to get the cooler temperatures and when you start to see the dew drops happening up, you can see the terminal ends of the leaves are all gone up, got turns brown, and they start to drop. And your tree will have a very thin canopy. And so if it happens year after year after year, it's going to actually impact the health of the tree. And here in Kenosha County, we have a lot of oak trees. So even though this disease doesn't kill it, but it also puts us in a very concern that we've been seeing this disease since in 2019. It's happening up every year again. So so this is actually something to be worried about it down the road. One of the best thing out of this whole thing is that it's been a great season for pollinators. You can see bees everywhere. The bees love it. Either it's a native bee, or it's a honey bee, or it's actually bumblebee, mason bee, or even the monarchs. The population has been so fine. They're all enjoying this beautiful, great summer. And thank to the Kenosha County, because we have a lot of native prairie plants in here in the site. And I think many of our native populations, bees, they seem to be coming back. There are reports that the rusty bumblebees, which is on the endangered list, is back again. And so their population is slowly building up in Wisconsin as well as in the Midwest area too. So it's been a wonderful season for the pollinators. So this is a few inquiries that I just highlighted to you. So in last month, we did a quick survey. We got in total about like 786 calls this year in 2021. Last year, we got only about 660 because of the COVID and stuff, you know. And before that, we got only 740 inquiries. So we've been gradually increasing up right now. And so we'd send out an email inquiry to about 350 people asking about how did we perform this year. And majority of the people, we got about 59 responses back. And majority of the people said we are doing excellent and good. They have given a lot of wonderful comments. Some of the comments that really actually pleases me was this one. We are very knowledgeable, polite, patient, thorough, friendly, and professional. I don't want to boast myself too much or my Master Gardener team, but I really like that quote from one of the clients who gave us a wonderful feedback to us. So we are pleased about it. And I plan on continuing this program next year as well, too. We want to provide a better service. Now we are back again in full back mode, back in the office. So I plan on training more master gardeners to field in all three county offices. And we plan on actually, you know, reaching out to the many residents. We want to promote this. That's one of the biggest thing, you know. Extension is always a hidden secret. And so we're trying to figure out a way how to strategize ourselves, market ourselves better, so that many people can take advantage of our service. So. Thank you, folks. Any questions, suggestions, comments, tips?
As far as the Grasshopper app goes, you said you started developing that in 2019 for the three county area?
Yes.
2019.
So I worked with our state program leader about this. And so the whole Grasshopper app is funded by the state. And the state wants to invest in our tri-county area because they want to actually use it statewide. So we were used as a guinea pig. We want to know how it works. And so it's an amazing app. And where consumers can reach us out by text. So they can easily take a snap, and we get the text message, and we respond very instantly as well, too. So that's one of the biggest advantage. So this year, the number of text messages have gone up. We've gone about 250 text messages. And email inquiries were close to about 300. So the number of phone call inquiries gone down, which is a bit surprising. But you know, the text, I think many people are taking advantage of text. So that was really good.
BJ, thank you.
Thank you.
For creatively adapting and keeping our community informed throughout these challenging times. And thanks for giving us an update.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for your support.
Okay. Then Terry, I'll just at your discretion, we'll do educator updates and your updates. And look forward to hearing what else is happening with UWX.
Sounds good. Well, why don't we open with Mary?
Yep. So I'll just highlight a couple things. So something that happened last month was we did the first time a Kenosha County Child Support and Family Court FAQ. It was a two-day series for folks that are working in case management or other family-serving professionals, where we were able to have staff from the child support team, one of the family court commissioner, and then also someone that does fatherhood programming locally. So it was a great success. We did it kind of in the vein that Racine County has been doing that for a number of years. So the feedback that we received was good. The professionals actually preferred the virtual format. I think at this point they're all pretty comfortable with that, and it's easy for them to be able to log in between other busy scheduling things. So that was a success. And then something that's coming up that will be newer is 4-H volunteers are going to have a new component to their training for like chaperoning excursions and field trips and things like that with the youth, of supporting mental health, youth mental health. So I'm going to be one of the coaches for that. So we're gonna be getting going with piloting that at the end of this year and going into early next year, of just being able to reach out to the youth serving volunteers and just kind of getting everyone on the same page about mental health and what they should do if there's concerns or things that arise while they're overseeing the youth in their care. I'll pass pass it along.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you, Mary. I will be giving updates for Erica Ness, but before I do that, I've invited the youth and governance members, Mackenzie and Brooke, to just talk a little bit about what they've been up to in the youth and governance program.
So right now we're working on two different projects. One is relating to mental health and outreach for high schoolers, specifically more out in KUSD school districts and some private schools out there. So we have two different projects going on right now. The second one that we're working for is voter outreach and information on how to register to vote. Our long-term goal for that is to have a booth set up at some markets and fairs that'll be going on in the spring 2022, just to provide information for people on how to vote, the importance of voter registration, and also target 18-year-olds and young adults, so we can really work on voter outreach and educating people on that.
Yeah, I was unable to make our first voter registration meeting, so I'm not completely caught up on all of the goals that we've set, but I'm looking forward to the project, and I'm glad that we're doing the group project this year.
Yeah, that's new for you all. Well, congratulations. It sounds like excellent choices, and thanks for the updates. So I'll jump into the rest of Erica's updates. So the Youth as Resource Program had their first grant giving cycle and awarded the following dollar amounts. $400 went to the Bristol Challenge 4-H for blankets for the Sharing Center project. $160 to the Midwest Therapeutic Writing Program for the Christmas Party for Children with Disabilities project. And just as a reminder, for we have a lot of programs. Sometimes I know it's hard to keep straight. These are youth groups that are requesting the funds from the Youth and Adult Combined Board. That was $160. $500 went to a Cub Scouts Pack $750 for the ELCA Winter Clothing Support Project, and $150 to KUSD Southport Elementary School for their Veterans Day Parade Project. And the next Youth as Resources deadline is this Friday, so if you all know of any youth groups who want to apply, the granting will be by next Tuesday, so Friday is the deadline. And I don't know if those messages are coming out to you all through your Kenosha County email, but that's maybe something we could push out in the future.
I know I've seen some things through social media, just, you know, because I follow the extension and things like that.
Great.
But, I don't recall getting emails about it.
Okay. Do you have a preference? Is that too much? I don't want to email y'all to death. Okay, good.
I think that'd be helpful.
Okay, sure. Maybe we'll do some, you know, summaries of, like, upcoming things with deadlines, if that's helpful for you, to have it all in one place. Okay, excellent. So those were Erica's. Amy, do you want me to go ahead and read yours? Amy's been listening in patiently here on the Zoom.
Yeah, please just go ahead.
Okay,
Terry,
sure. If I miss anything, feel free to jump in here. Amy, this is all in October, presented at the Toward One Wisconsin statewide conference about how social networks strengthen health equity within community food systems. So she's been doing a lot of work with the Kenosha Food Bank and also some research and writing on social network and has combined those. She spoke with WGTD Radio about food security trends and progress milestones achieved by the Kenosha County Food Bank. And that's going to be next month's hot topic here at PDEC, so don't miss out. She wrote a column about the statewide broadband challenges and opportunities and promoted an upcoming broadband summit. And presented at Sharing Center's All Clergy event to spur new partnerships between faith-based organizations and nonprofit public agencies in Western Kenosha County. So that's pretty innovative. Nice work. And finally, met with partners to plan an event with UW Parkside faculty, staff, students to determine the feasibility of an on-campus food pantry. How'd I do, Amy?
That's perfect. And I'll just say it wasn't in October, but we did start our PATH entrepreneurship program at the Kenosha Creative Space through a grant that we secured through the Small Business Development Center. So I've been working on a number of pieces trying to get that program off the ground, and it is off the ground, and we're in our second week training social entrepreneurs and artists and creatives in business planning. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thanks so much. And I think that's it. I'll segue into my updates. So April and I have been the fill-in, horrible fill-in 4-H educator, and we've been limping along, but the council worked really hard, and a lot of hands jumped in to support their awards night, which they held here last night. And I learned a whole lot about 4-H in about a two-week time period. So that was exciting, and we were happy that they could still move on. It's a little bit later than what they normally had. But and then I'll switch from that hat to the administrator hat. We did hire, and I'm in the process of onboarding, our new FoodWise administrator, so my former position. So you will see Atifa Robinson joining us here as she learns the ropes and gets acclimated. And she's worked for several community partners in the Kenosha community, so we're real excited about her acumen with partners and also the target audience. She's worked with a lot of low-income, limited resource populations, and so this is a perfect fit. In my mind, we are pending the answer with an offer to a 4-H educator, so keep your fingers and toes crossed. Hopefully we'll have some good news coming. And let's see, what else do we have? Still working on the ag position with the institute director, and hope to get that posted right around the first of the year. We're kind of running into the holidays with our longer interview schedules and extension, and having to pull the committees together. So we want to avoid that and hope for more candidates at the beginning of the year, because our pools have been pretty shallow. Let's see. So I shared about the 4-H learning. We are planning our professional development day for December 6th, which is on a Monday. And I will be extending the offer if you all want to join us for lunch. We usually do a professional development day for all of our area, since we've moved from the county director model to the two counties. And we want to invite you all to join us, just not necessarily for the nuts and bolts, but you certainly can for more of that content if you would like, but definitely for lunch. So we'll keep you posted on that. And
did you say that's December 6th?
Yes, okay. That's on a Monday, December 6th. So more details to be announced. It's usually planned by several staff member in a committee format, but with all the changes this year, I didn't want to miss out on this opportunity for our colleagues to connect. So I have sort of pieced together some events, and we're really still going through a lot of changes from the move to Madison, the institute level. So we're going to talk a lot about our alignment of systems, etc. So you don't want to be bored with that, but I think they have pretty good box lunches where we're going. So if that's of interest to you, you're welcome to join us. Any questions for any of us?
What was the name of the app again?
It's called Grasshopper.
Grasshopper?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what it does is that actually, if you have an existing phone lines, and you don't want to actually, what it does is that it diverts the phone line to the app. And so any inquiries that comes directly to the original line, it gets diverted to the app. Or if anyone directly calls the app number, it actually goes to the app itself. It records a message and sends it to your email. So it also acts for text. Or if you open up the app and an inquiry comes in or call comes in, you can pick it up right away.
Uh-huh.
So.
Thank you for those updates, everybody. Yeah. Amy, thanks for joining us virtually.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks, all.
Okay. Terry, anything else at all from you or your department?
Nothing today. Okay. That's it.
Well, then we'll pause for 15 minutes, and we'll resume with the planning and development portion in the hall next door there. All right, thank you, educators. Thank you, BJ.
Sure.
Just as I typically ask, but if you'd be able to send out your presentation to the whole committee, including youth and governance, via April or somebody, if you send it to her and then she can send it out to all of us,
definitely
that'd be great.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank
Perfect.
You so much.
Thanks,
all. Right, good night, all.
Have a good night.
Good, how are you?
Terry, if
yep.
I can reach out to BJ, but I did want to get his presentation as well. I think there might be some people interested in that drought information. So
definitely. All right.
Congratulate him and thank you, everyone. Thank you for bringing me in.
For sure. Thanks for joining us, Amy. Have a good night.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Meet up now next year. What I can tell is that we're going to see this frequency of drought happening now pretty soon.